And this week's interview is with Hansi of Blind Guardian. Hansi, it's always great to be able to talk to you and bring you on the show, as we've done for so long. And what does Blind Guardian currently have going on, and what are you currently doing?
Well, we're always busy. That is no secret. We stopped doing live shows last August, and we keep that as it is for at least the next 18 months or maybe even 2 years before, you know, we even consider to start touring with Blind Guardian again. That is, you know, to come up with new songs. We're in the middle of a very demanding songwriting period, and at the same time, we are finally finishing the orchestra project. I'm doing the vocals right at the moment. Yesterday I finished the 9th out of 11 songs, and basically my plan is to, you know, accomplish my lead vocals and my layers within the next 3 weeks, which is ambitious but doable. And after that, well, there will be still a lot of stuff to do, but I'm pretty sure at the end of the album we at least have the final mixing, whatever that means for the release. But I'm, you know, I'm also convinced that this orchestral album is going to be released next year.
Right.
Other than that, you know, I'm coming to the end of this quite demanding and very extensive songwriting process with regard to the orchestra project, while my friend John comes to an end with his touring cycle with Ice Dirt. And so, apart from what I'm doing at the moment, we both already have made plans for the rest of the year and for most of the next year. So apart from whatever I'm doing with Blind Guardian, John and I will start songwriting, and we are heavily considering doing some festival shows in the summer of 2019. You know, we have nothing confirmed so far, but I'm pretty sure that there will be a nice couple of shows for the summer 2019.
Now, you know, over the course of 20 years, I've had John Schaefer on the show, and I've interviewed him several times, dating all the way back to, you know, when A Days of Purgatory double album came out. And I got to tell you, of anybody that I've ever interviewed, John is the one of those guys that I've always had the utmost respect for, because he's very honest, and there's no, you know, he's not sugarcoating anything. And the thing I like about him, he's just a straightforward individual, and he doesn't dodge questions. He actually answers everything directly. And, you know, he's one of the most honest people that I believe I've ever spoken to when it comes to interviewing bands on this show.
You're totally right. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I'm, you know, having so much fun with him. You know, there's no surprising, you know, he literally, you know, carries his words on his tongue, and you know, he expresses himself very well. And, you know, as well, he's a very, very smart guy, apart from the point that he's very warm-hearted on the other hand.
You know, when we spoke a little bit offline, you know, obviously I told you that you were still one of my biggest vocal influences when it comes to recording, you know, doing studio recordings, basically. And what was interesting is that I get a lot of my vocal layering technique from you and what you do with Blind Guardian. And, you know, for me, I've always been like, you know, I already know what I'm going to do, but I always go in there and I start messing around with harmonies and maybe testing things out. But for you, you know, how easy is it for you to do this now that you've been doing it a very long time? You know, obviously, with the big choirs and everything that you have going on, it does take some thought to really go into that. I mean, at least for me and the projects and stuff that I record on, you know, that vocal layering really does take a lot of thought on my part. But for you, do you have stuff in mind as far as when you go into the studio, hey, these vocal harmonies are going to fit here and fit here? Or do you just go and record it and then kind of, you know, try different things out and see what works the best?
I pre-record all this stuff, so I have a pretty good idea what I'm supposed to do during the day. But still, due to the excitement when doing songwriting, you know, that's the magic moment always has a big influence there. Whenever I'm in the studio itself and do the recordings for an album, you have to consider that obstacles become a reality, be it, you know, a semi note which has to be changed, or, you know, a complete layer which does not really fit anymore because the intensity of the music has changed. And that is especially the case with the orchestral stuff. Mm-hmm. So I have to be prepared for changes. And this is something which I have been good in naturally, but I've learned a lot during the last, let's say, 20 to 25 years, you know, mm-hmm. while being in the studio, because, you know, while working with so many different producers, you get an idea who can drive you even more forwards. And with Charlie Bauerfeind, I nowadays have a person I totally rely on. So I know exactly if he changes something, or if he intends to have something changed in my vocal layers, then it is a necessity, and there's not much need to discuss about. What sometimes drives me crazy is when jumping through the different voicings and, you know, going from very low to very high and doing that, like, you know, multiple times, and then, you know, jumping to the next song and then starting, let's say, from the lower part to the higher part again, then I'm losing myself from time to time, and I have to take, you know, myself back then and have to allow myself to take a break. Otherwise I would overdo it. This is still the most difficult part for me. Nowadays, we've spoken about age before, you know, I am far smarter, I would say, with regard to that. In the old days, I pushed my head against the wall, you know, fell down and did the same thing again. Nowadays, you know, when it happens to me once, you know, I'm trying to judge how that could happen, and I would like to avoid to smash my head against the wall for a second time. So with the experience, you know, I learned to maintain in the studio. And with regard to Blind Guardian, but also to Demons and Wizards, I just figured that none of the productions and none of the songwriting can be seen as a short distance run. And I always have to, you know, consider it long distance, and that, you know, a record will not be done in one day, and, you know, I will not succeed within one day. That is the lesson I've learned over the years. And I'm fine with that. And as said, since I prepare myself properly before a session, you know, I can do that for days and days and days and weeks and weeks and weeks. It's different in comparison to a live appearance, for example. Mm-hmm. I went on stage for, you know, any of the tourings of the last albums. Doing more than four shows is quite a challenge, you know, back to back. But being in the studio for 10 days or 12 days and singing for, let's say, 3 to 4 hours, I don't do more anymore. You know, and back in the days, I did go for 6 or 7 hours sometimes, but I do not do that anymore. But I could, you know, keep my condition in a fairly strength status for at least 12 to 14 days mm-hmm. before I need a break. And the break usually is not more than 3 or 4 days, and then I continue.
Now, you mentioned Charlie Bauerfeind as being someone that you rely on, and I know there are bands that do rely on him. I know Helloween's relied on him for 18 years, much like you guys have relied on him for even longer than that. And, you know, to me, it's, you know, talking to another producer, this is something that's lost with a lot of bands these days. And, you know, you obviously keep him in the fold, and he helps guide the direction of the band, you know, as far as, you know, the production goes and things like that. Do you feel that this is something that's necessary in music today? You think it's still necessary? You know, not as many bands are doing it, but in my opinion, it's been lost. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel very privileged about the situation, because I agree 100%. I see that, or I listen to many albums, and, you know, it becomes visual to me when a producer is involved, especially a producer who is inspired by a band or not. That is so obvious. I understand why bands are doing it, because it's a lack of money, basically. But I feel totally privileged to, you know, have the opportunity to work with a person like Charlie. For us as a band, since we are, you know, driven by, you know, creating the perfect album. Everyone in the band is. We need someone who conducts us. And Charlie himself, he's very ambitious with any of the projects he's involved in. So he won't let you go before he does not think, well, that's the maximum which you can accomplish at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I totally appreciate that. To say so, when we're on tour, we need a conductor, and that would be our drummer, Frederick, without any doubt. He is the driving force, and he keeps us together very well. In a new situation, like, you know, songwriting, from songwriting to production, you need someone else, because even Frederick then is not so deep into the subject that he can, you know, completely fulfill this position. But yeah, that's what we actually need a producer for. And John and I, when we speak about Demons and Wizards, possible next Demons and Wizards album, it's the same. We will produce the album ourselves, but we need at least a strong engineer who's capable, you know, in pushing us to the limit, mm-hmm. basically. And that's what these people are there for. There's a saying, I don't know if it's just amongst us, but I think there is a ultimate truth in it. Any individual and any artist can accomplish 70% in terms of production, quite easy. You know, that's doable with a decent amount of money and with a decent amount of time. Almost every artist can achieve that. But going further, and, you know, that's at least the aim in Blind Guardian, also for Demons and Wizards, every step you do up from that is painful and very demanding.
So, you know, the infamous orchestral album we've been talking about for quite a long time now. Obviously, you talked about moving forward with that, and, you know, that possibly coming out, you know, maybe in the next year or two. You know, I know it's going to sound different, you know, because it's going to be a different kind of music. But let's talk about that. Talk about this orchestral album that Blind Guardian is looking to put out, and, you know, give us some background insight, what it sounds like, and where you guys are at with it right now.
We're in a total development phase with that. Even, you know, the concrete direction for the concept, even though I've finished nine songs lyrically and vocally, that has still some open gaps. It is going to be a mystery fantasy story related in the loose history of the 17th century. That's what I can tell already. Mm-hmm. And there will be a lot of bizarre creatures. Musically, it is Blind Guardian music without Blind Guardian instruments. You know, that's more or less all I can say. You will immediately catch the spirit of our songwriting and the magic of our melodies, which is all over the place. And yeah, there's a lot of fancy singing, quite different characters this time. So even the voice, you know, is the same, but, you know, it switches a little bit, you know, just to comfort the story. So that might be the biggest difference in terms of songwriting. What can I say? I mean, it started in 1998 when we did, or 1997 when we were about to finish the songwriting for Nightfall and Middle-earth. We came up with two songs which would have fitted into the album, but they lacked heavy instrumentation. So we felt, well, instead of involving heavy instruments, it might make sense to keep it as it is, because the songs, they occurred completely ready for us, but they did not fit into the Nightfall concept due to, you know, the lack of metal instruments. So we said, well, we keep that and look out for songs like this. If some of these songs come up, we do an orchestral album one fun day. And ever since, you know, I failed to announce the exact date. 10 years ago, I was pretty sure the album would come out fairly soon. 5 years ago, I thought the same. And, you know, now I'm almost convinced, but since I failed so many times, I do not even dare to say it certainly will come out next year, which seems to be a fact, but since I've been wrong so many times, I'm really cautious here. Yet, you know, I'm almost done, as said. It is very, very soundtrackish, like orchestral music. Mm. But as I said, it's all individual, and it all contains a lot of my singing.
Now, I remember back in 1998 when you and I first talked 20 years ago, and it's when I first started doing the show. And, you know, we had talked about, you know, you guys are pretty popular in Europe. You guys had a pretty good following in Japan, South America, a lot of other places, but you hadn't really broken into the U.S. market yet. And, you know, what's interesting is that now when I go and see you, you know, Blind Guardian went from being a band that, you know, pretty much nobody knew about, you know, and a lot of the metal bands from back then, same thing with Gravedigger too. You know, when you guys came over and played together back in 2015, you know, there were people walking in there with kilts or people walking in with Blind Guardian shirts on. And, you know, you guys pretty much sold the venue out that held about 1,000 people. But before, I remember the first tour you did, you didn't sell as much, obviously, but your fan base has grown over here. And for you guys, what was the turning point for you as far as your U.S. audience goes? Because I remember Nightfall Middle Earth came out, and it wasn't released here in the U.S. It didn't come out in the U.S. until about a year later. But, you know, obviously you guys have gained a fan base over here in the States. And, you know, what was the turning point for you to help that grow?
Well, basically it goes back to Central Media and John again, because John convinced me that there is a metal scene in the States. And what is it? Snow White, it just needed the kiss, you know, to get rid of the apple. And then he was pretty sure that a lot of people would be interested in Blind Guardian. So he established the contact to Central Media. I pushed my record company, Virgin Records, back then to do that license deal with Central Media. And ever since, I just figured that there is a strong metal market in the U.S. Of course, the mechanisms in the U.S. are different because it's such a big country, and mainstream means something different than it does in Europe, or especially in Germany, for example. So the traditional metal may never become mainstream again, leaving, you know, the success of Iron Maiden or Judas Priest out. But we felt that there was a high need and a high demand for a band like Blind Guardian. So that changed my complete perspective of the market, of course. You know, when talking to people and when figuring that there is an interest, the opportunity to play in the U.S., you know, was given short after. And of course, you know, as a rock musician, any rock musician would take that chance. And we started doing our first tour in the U.S. in 2002. We first have been invited by the Prog Power Festival, but along with that came the first tour, which we played with Symphony X. And that was, you know, at least an underground significant success. So we never gave up, and we for ourselves decided that it's worth to work on the American market and try to figure how far we can get. And still, it is more of an underground market for us in comparison to Europe, but it's a very interesting underground market. And even if it will not grow drastically anymore, it is fun to see how dedicated the people are. This is something I found out not only in the States, but in a lot of countries where, you know, Blind Guardian is not a top-notch mainstream act. The people, you know, the crowds in these countries are maybe even more dedicated, and they are so into the bands, it would be an offense against them not to come over and play for them.
You know, it's interesting because I point back to that first tour that you guys did, and, you know, Symphony X was kind of in the same boat. They even though they were from the States, they didn't have a huge fan base here, but you guys came over here, you played together. Obviously, Symphony X, a much different band than Blind Guardian, even though, you know, very, very good. And it seemed that tour, you know, after that tour happened, the fan bases of both bands here in the U.S. grew considerably.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it's different music. The approach is completely different. But I was happy to see that a band like this, you know, would make it in the US and even here in Europe. So, I mean, they are great musicians. There's no doubt about that. And the tour, as said, can be considered to be a success.
You know, a lot of people talk about heavy metal guitar players. You know, there's a lot of names that are always thrown out. But the one guy that I, you know, and member of your band that never really seems to get a lot of recognition is Andre. And I say that because you don't really see him mentioned much along, you know, basically along with other really great guitar players. And I think this guy, in my opinion, is, you know, one of the most underrated guitar players in heavy metal. And it just baffles me that he's not mentioned more, at least over here in the U.S. I don't know what it's like in Europe, but I know in the U.S., you know, when people talk about guitar players, I never hear this man's name. And I really think he's one of the most underrated people in heavy metal.
Well, he's my partner, and I know how good he is in songwriting, and I know how picky he is about his guitar, so he will be happy to hear that. Even though he at least here in Europe, I can say that he has a strong reputation amongst guitarists, you know, for his precision. He's a fantastic orchestrator and lead guitars, almost like I'm doing with the vocals. He's more or less doing the same with the guitars. But what I totally think is that he's underrated as a rhythm guitarist, because he cannot only play very cool riffs, he is so precise, you know, when playing rhythm guitars. I don't know a lot of other guitarists which can do that. I mean, it is really impressive. He's not Tony Iommi, don't get me wrong, and he's not John Schaefer, but with regard to rhythm guitars, but he is really, really strong there as well. So in the combination, he might be the strongest European guitarist.
Well, you know, the real test is always live, when you watch somebody play live. And I remember sitting in front of the stage in the pit, the photo pit, taking pictures of you guys. And I was mainly on the side of the stage that he was on. And I watched this man play on stage. You know, one, he didn't really mess up very much. And I'm a guy that's very keen on picking up on that. And two, the man just blew my mind with his guitar playing on stage. I mean, the guy's really that good. And it's just a shame nobody mentions him, because I think the guy, from a live perspective as well, just is just awesome.
Yeah, he does not make a lot of mistakes, that's for sure. No, as said, he's very picky, you know, when doing his guitar orchestration and stuff like this, he almost needs the same time I do for vocals. Mm-hmm. And that means something, because I take a lot of time for my vocals.
Now, getting off to a different topic, obviously, you know, you've worked with one of my favorite musicians of all time, and that is Ian Lucassen of Arion. And I have to say that it was great. I still think it's great that you worked with him on a couple records now, because you have a very good musical chemistry for what you do with him. And I think you fit the style of songs that he writes. And he's a different kind of animal than what you are normally working with. Let's talk a bit about working with Ian Lucassen and the last Arion album, and what kind of guy he is like to work with, you know, in comparison to what you guys are normally doing.
Well, I mean, he is a character. He's a very strong and warm-hearted person again. He is a multi-instrumentalist. I mean, that gets very close to genius, I have to say. He plays a few instruments on a very, very high level. When he designs his songs, he is as precise as Blind Guardian, I would say. It's a different type of songwriting, of course. But what amazes me the most, and, you know, I've worked with a lot of different musicians, especially when it comes to vocals. He is the only musician I know who's not, you know, a native vocalist and has the vocals exactly in mind, and who has an exact idea who's supposed to sing what. So he might be the rare breed who, you know, where a composer really composes something for the vocalist. Mm-hmm. Other composers just say it, you know. That's at least my experience, you know. In general, there's more work, you know, with whomever you work. I as a vocalist need to explore the dimension of this musician and try to bring myself into it by inventing it or by discovering where I could bring myself in. But that's not necessary when working with Arjen. Arjen really, you know, designs the songs, and you just have to, you know, follow his instructions and you will do good.
You know, for me, every musician that I've ever worked with, I always take something from them. I learn something new from them. And you have obviously done a lot of guest appearances on some records. And, you know, is there anything that you take with you, anything you learned from any of these guys? Like, say, when you worked with Ion Lucas and Averion, is there anything you learned as far as working with him goes? Anything that you, when working with somebody, you take back, hey, I'm going to try this, or I learned this?
There's always a little bit, yes. But, I mean, I think that's the nature of things, you know, trial and error. Whenever I get something and I commit myself to it, I try to do it the best way, and I also try to do it the way I would guess these persons would like to, you know, have me appearing in their stuff.
Right.
And by doing that, by adjusting myself to a different art, I'm learning something. And, you know, I could not put my finger into the wound where exactly am I learning what, but, you know, there's always something.
Yeah, I'm going to go back in time again a little bit, because I have to say one of the people that I had on this radio show very early on in his career was Tobias Sammet of Ed Guy. And back in 1998, again, he was a guy that I had on the radio show, and you sang on the Vainglory Opera album. And obviously he's gone on to do some really great things and has done some amazing things with the Avantasia, the subsequent Ed Guy albums, and even singing on that Arion album that you just did. And, you know, let's go back in time a little bit. Describe what it was like to really work on that Vainglory Opera album with a very young Tobias Sammet and a very young group of guys in Ed Guy.
Well, as far as I remember, I might be wrong. We haven't even met in person, because I was in contact with the CEO of his record company, who contacted me, and he said, well, I have a band and there are a bunch of Blind Guardian fans in the band. Obviously, it has not been Tobias who's more into the falsetto sort of vibrato vocalist, and for him we were a little too harsh and a little too heavy, but there were some people in the band who really loved Blind Guardian, and they would have loved, you know, to have anyone of Blind Guardian involved in one of their albums. And I said, well, you know, send me the stuff and I check if it's interesting for me or not. So I got the stuff and I liked it from the beginning, and Tobias called me some days later after I received it, and we had a, you know, nice casual discussion, and, you know, he impressed me as a person. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You know, he was really ambitious. He, as the whole band, got his stuff together. That was impressing for the time and for the age, for sure. So he asked me, you know, to help them out with some vocals, and he was interested in how I did my vocal layers. And I said, well, send me any of your songs, and, you know, I'm trying to explain what I'm doing. And I did, you know, we did that by phone. I just said, well, you know, whatever you've learned and, you know, whatever producers told you, forget about it and try to do it this way and that way, and this is how I would do it. And, you know, I don't care for cross voicings. I do not care if there are any voices which, you know, have the same notes in or not, and, you know, then cross again. Just go for it, and, you know, this would be a layer I could imagine would fit to, you know, what you have composed.
Right.
And they liked it. And back then it was, I don't even know, I think I recorded it on a 16 track analog, you know, Fostex, something like this, and I transferred that to ADAT, and from ADAT it was transferred to their 24-track, and then they just used it. It was, you know, it was a different time, and people did not care. I mean, when I started listening to metal in the 80s, and when we all have been, you know, bootleg and demo collectors, no one cared for the sounding and for, you know, mistakes in the performance or anything like that. You know, this is something which came in later, and it's sometimes for the better, sometimes I doubt that it is for the better. But, you know, back then when I did the stuff with Tobias, that was really, really funny. And he's a good guy, and he stayed a good guy.
You know, since we have talked, you know, in the last 20 years, you guys have really accomplished a lot of great stuff as a band, you know, individually and musically. You guys have just done really well. And, you know, getting a bigger fan base in the U.S., growing the band's fan base worldwide, and really putting out some pretty good records. And over these past 20 years, what are some of the things you're most proud of as far as your accomplishments go?
Well, basically, I'm proud about any of our outputs. It's still the climax in a, you know, in a circle. We have 4-year circle, and that includes all touring and everything we're doing. The climax is always somewhere, you know, during the songwriting period, when I personally feel, well, this is maybe my legacy, you know, to the world, to at least to the musical world. And when I figure we have done something very special, like on the last album, it was when we did the Grand Parade, mm-hmm. and also when we did the Ninth Wave. This is a satisfaction which is very hard to describe, but, you know, it's just by shaping something out of the nothingness, to say so, and by really having the impression, well, this in this particular way hasn't been done by anyone, and I've not been influenced by, you know, any melody line or by any lyrical line by anyone else, but, you know, having done that, you know, out of the blue, to say so. This is something which still drives me and makes me very proud. If it comes to performances, well, I mean, to a certain point, whenever playing Wacken, that's a confirmation, you know. And when we are over all these years still in a headlining position there, that is somehow showing me that we must have been doing something right.
Now, this is a question I've been asking a lot of bands and a lot of singers that I've been interviewing on this radio show, especially guys that have been doing this a long time. But, you know, when I go and listen to these records, when I watch you play live, when I watch you sing live, I listen to the live albums, you know, vocally, you really haven't lost it, where some singers, you know, their voice is deteriorated, they don't sound anywhere near as good as they did, but you sound pretty good live and obviously in a studio. And what have you done to take care of yourself, to really make sure your voice still sounds great after, you know, doing this for the better part of 30 years?
I'm happy to hear that. It's maybe an inner strength. It's a spirit, you know, by being driven, to say so, by the right things. You know, it is the music which keeps me going. And I'm living what we are doing, you know. Right. When I sing, it's, you know, it's an expression of my soul. You know, whether the notes come out clearly and correct or not doesn't matter too much, especially in a live situation. Of course, I want to shine, no doubt. And it's nice if I can reach the high spots in a concert situation. But, you know, that takes place here and there, but in general, I have, you know, to work in an economic way, and I believe that is what has kept me alive over the years. That, right. You know, I found a key to, you know, somehow shine, but on the other hand, to be in control. Still, you know, I'm giving a lot of gas when I'm on stage, and I'm fairly loud, I would say, but it's still, it's a fire which I got under control over the years. You know, sometimes it let loose. I let loose a little more. Then, you know, it becomes a little more difficult the next day. Sometimes I'm under control for myself, but I take care. I take care of my voice, and you know, I take care of myself as a human being. You know, and that I can say about all the Blind Guardian guys. We love what we're doing musically, but we, you know, we really take care. We consider that our main mission.
Well, you know, what's funny about that, though, is that, you know, when you're playing live, you really don't need backing vocals, because pretty much every show that I've been a part of that I've seen you guys play, and even on your live albums, you know, the whole crowd is basically your backing vocals. It's almost like you don't even need the band.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Thank you. in other ways, you know, our performance would not be doable. We really need that. We depend on that, and our fans are aware of that. If you check what I'm doing on an album, there hardly is any time to breathe. So at least when the big choirs come, I'm always happy to just give over to the rest of the band and to a fabulous audience. And that, of course, helps me to stay alive.
Well, Hansi, obviously it was very good to have you on my show yet again. And I always love promoting you guys. And, you know, as my last question, you know, pretty much with all of my interviews, you know, any last words for the fans and, you know, people that are going to be listening to this interview?
Well, there will be a next Blind Guardian tour. Just keep your eyes open. I would guess that we're not on the road before 2020, but to make the long waiting a little easier for you, I can promise a lot of shows with Demons and Wizards. Hopefully we can also play some shows in the States. That would be a blast for John and me.